Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, I'm Larry Mueller, and really pleased to welcome back Shelley Ryan, producer and host of Wisconsin Public Television's The Wisconsin Gardener Program, started back in 1992, and as an adult, she earned Master Gardener status from the Dane County Horticulture Extension Office, but she's been fascinated with plants and gardening since, well, a long time ago.
That's right. back to high school.
But you, over 20 years of the Wisconsin Gardener, and you started it. Did you ever expect to be sitting here at the end of 2012?
Looking
back at so many episodes and seasons?
I didn't even expect to be on TV. I mean, when I first proposed the idea, I hadn't fleshed it out to the part that I'd be doing it. I was just a frustrated gardener who had gone to local nurseries and gotten wrong information. And even, yeah. I mean, even I got suspicious when they said a Colorado blue spruce was a native tree. And I kept thinking, and my husband and I really designed the whole idea on our back porch. And I kept thinking, if I'm frustrated, how many other people are frustrated? You know, and you can watch a national show, and in fact, a certain national show. I watched an entire episode, and not a single thing on that particular episode would survive in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And that's when I think I got mad and said, dang it, we need our own show. And I didn't take it beyond the fact that I would end up on camera.
Yeah.
Yeah, and what that meant. And that I think the biggest surprise still was when the first time somebody asked for my autograph, and I said, what for? Luckily, my boss was along, and she said, smile, shut up, and sign it. And I'm like, okay. It just said, you know, as a gardener, I was thinking dirt and digging. I wasn't thinking of the, shall we say, notoriety that went with it.
Well, and you make it sound so, you make it seem so easy. I mean, you do it, it's a fun show, and, you know, everybody's having a good time, we're learning a lot, and it seems so easy, but it's a lot of work. I know it's a lot of work.
I think having a wonderful crew that whose favorite job in life is teasing me puts the guest at ease and does make it easy. And I think over the 20 years, we've perfected that technique. You know that we put the guest at ease when they start teasing me.
Yeah.
And we are having a good time. And I think that's why the show has been successful, because you can see that I'm really excited by whatever the topic is. If I were doing a news show, it would have died within about 5 minutes. Whereas, you know, so far I haven't found an aspect of gardening that I would yawn over.
No, it's all,
you know, it's every aspect from water, from ponds and waters to, you know, identifying plants. That's still my first love. Uh-huh. To, you know, growing new kinds of food crops to, you know, you name it.
Yeah.
There's always something new around the corner. And when you think you've learned it all, ha, there's another surprise coming.
And you've got some great surprises coming, great shows coming this season.
Yeah, we've got four new shows lined up for 2013. They've not been scheduled yet, so I can just give them in the order that they're coming. In March for the pledge drive, we're going to do an entire show on Japanese gardening. And again, you know, here was something I knew little about. And by the end of this, I was ready to go home and rip out the yard again. My poor husband. We actually went to Anderson Japanese Gardens in Rockford, which is considered one of the premier Japanese gardens in North America.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Right here.
Yeah. You know, it's just on the other side of the Wisconsin border. And it was so awesome. We actually lost our videographer because he just took off with the camera. And so we haven't finished editing that yet. And I don't know what's on the tape because he came back and just said, here's the tape. Thank you. We're also going to create a portable Japanese moss garden with a man in Waukesha that's his passion, is mosses. So we put a Japanese maple in a container, and then the mulch are all these incredible mosses that he works with. And then we learn about Ikebana, the art of Japanese flower arranging. And that's kind of hysterical because the instructor actually sits me down and tries to tutor me through it. And we were fine until she said, everything is triangular. I'm like, okay, does this involve math? And then we ended up at a Japanese restaurant in Green Bay, learning how to do some very, very simple recipes with cucumbers. So local foods, Japanese dishes.
Wonderful.
And you'll never look at a can of tuna the same. That's the only hint I'll give. So that's coming up in March. The other three shows coming up consecutively, one is called The Eyes Have It. It's a little joke because it's about potatoes.
Oh.
So, okay, raise the laughter now. Okay, that's enough. We're going to the world's largest potato gene bank, which, of course, everybody knows is in Sturgeon Bay.
It is?
Yeah. I know. See, again, you know, as long as I've been here, there's something new still. And what's really fascinating is they gather wild potatoes from all over the world and take them back there and not only check them for, like, frost hardiness. And some of these are teeny tiny little potatoes like the size of my thumbnail that you wouldn't eat, but might have qualities that might be bred into larger edible potatoes. And two of the ones that they were working on that just really excited me is one had properties that they're thinking of that they have, how do I say this, have chemicals in them that can fight prostate cancer.
Huh?
And one for breast cancer.
Wow.
So potatoes are a bigger deal than I ever thought.
Yeah.
So, of course, from there, we segued into a cooking segment from La Miranda Restaurant in Milwaukee, a multiple award-winning restaurant, some cooking recipes and some demos with potatoes. And, of course, we ate them all. But we'll share those on camera. And then the Gardens of a Grace Hospice Care in Fitchburg. And vertical gardening at Rotary Gardens in Janesville. Using some incredible vertical gardens, not just trellis. Some wonderful ideas that, of course, I'd like to play with. Then the third show is called Problem Solvers. We went to a garden on the bay, on the Green Bay in Sturgeon Bay, a very long, narrow garden. It's like only 100 feet wide, but goes straight down to the lake on top of no topsoil at all, and how they transformed that into a hosta garden.
Extraordinaire. Really cool.
Yeah. We also talk about the drought. Now, most people are thinking, well, that's for this year. Unfortunately, we're going to have some long-term effects to the drought. So Lisa Johnson, Dane County horticultural educator, she and I sat down and talked about what people should look for next year. Because especially for large trees, you know, people were worried about their lawns in some ways. To heck with your lawns. Worry about your trees.
Yeah.
And what to look for next year. Things like root rot. And then we looked at moss roses back at Rotary Gardens, which are a wonderful problem solver. I think I finally found out what to plant in my window box that maybe won't die. And then this incredible garden in Mineral Point that what they built over a auto salvage yard. They had to have the soil tested. You know, they had to test for heavy metals. I mean, the place was just a disaster. And when you see it on camera, you won't believe it. I mean, talk about out of the ashes, the phoenix rising. And then the last show for next year is, I think, rather appropriate. It's climate change for gardeners. Because our zones have changed just this year alone. And it talks about some of the super weeds that we can expect. Oh, joy. And new insects coming up our way. And just what is climate change? We're going to get rid of some of the myths, you know, that people think are out there. And what we can expect as gardeners.
So lots of great shows.
Yeah.
Looking forward to it. And we have callers online who want to visit with you. I haven't given the number yet, so let me do that now. Even though I haven't given the number, we have somebody online. The number is 1-800-642-1234. If you have a gardening question for Shelley Ryan, hope you'll join in. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org with your question. Or go online to my Facebook page at The Larry Mealer Show, post a question, comment, or maybe you've got a pretty plant picture or a garden picture, a photo. We'd love to have you post that as well. Karen in Wanakee has been waiting a while, so let's go to her. Karen, thank you for calling.
Good morning, and thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
And Shelley, I'm just so happy to hear your show again today. So
thank you.
My question is, I was told a while ago that you could plant peas now in the fall for very early crop in the spring. Do you have any knowledge of this?
I have never heard that.
Well, I have to tell you that I was expecting much earlier winter than what we got. So I already planted them. Guess what? I got sprouting peas.
Oh, well, that's not good.
No,
for sure.
I'm not so worried about the little bit that I experimented with, but I just thought, I got to ask Shelley if she's ever heard of that.
No, because, in fact, the biggest killer of peas is the damp. The damp soil. They don't mind cold temperatures, but cold, wet is, and you know, they're going to freeze their little green parts off if we get a real winter. Now, you know, I mean, with what I just said about climate change,
right.
I mean, you know, who knows? Maybe you'll get peas before it gets real cold out, but I kind of doubt it.
I don't think I'll be looking for that, but I just, you know, if this is something that is truly something, I'll try it next year, but I'll do it later.
I don't think it's going to work because then they'd be sitting there in the ground in that cold, wet next spring.
Yeah.
You want to plant them as early as you can, but not not when that cold, wet.
Sure.
Not when the soil's, you know, like all clammy and wet. Mm-hmm. You know, if you can squeeze it and water comes out, it's too wet to plant.
It's too wet, yeah. That was my thinking, but anyhow, other question is blue spruce. I heard you speak about the blue spruce.
Yeah, it's not a native. That was one of my first educations many, many years ago.
So we planted one in memory of our son that passed away about 2 years ago.
Oh, that's a nice.
And I've noticed that there's a little bit of a problem on one side of it, that very limp branches, and they're not damaged as far as, you know, cracked or broken from the planting, but it just, I hope that it's not a disease, but I think maybe we just got to have to watch it until, spring and see what develops.
Yeah.
But it's been in the ground for a year, and these lower branches are just limp.
Well, one of the reasons, in fact, we did a whole show with Brian Huddleston about other evergreens that people are overlooking, is because, unfortunately, Colorado blue spruce, very popular tree, is also more disease prone than some of the other trees we could be planting. So you might, you know, want to be proactive. And I mean, there's probably nothing. Well, it might not be too late. You could send a cutting. A cutting to Brian Huddleston at the plant diagnostics lab. And he can tell if there's something vascular wrong with it. If it's, you know, something that's only active during the growing season, no. But if it's something the fact that it's limp makes me think there might be something within the branches themselves.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you can get to that website by going to my website. Or, Larry, do you have a
link
also?
Yeah, we have the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic. Yeah, we have a...
Okay.
On my Facebook page.
Plant Disease
Diagnostics Lab. Mm-hmm. And I forget, it's minimal cost, like $10 or $15. But it talks you through the steps, what to send as a sample. And, you know, he will look at it, try to pull out a disease, tell you what it is, and how to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's worth it.
Especially since this is kind of an important tree.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, it is. So.
Yeah.
I would get right on that.
All righty. Thank you.
Yep, thanks a lot, Karen, for calling.
That.
Appreciate your call. Shelley Ryan, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer, on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You are listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guest today, Shelley Ryan, producer and host of Wisconsin Public TV's The Wisconsin Gardener Program. Started back in 1992, she did. She started it, her idea, and she's brought it along all these years. We just were talking about the shows that are coming up this year, which sound just great. And, of course, she's more than happy to answer your questions when you call or email or go to my Facebook page and post there. The number 1-800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org. Or go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. You can post a question or a comment there, or even a photo. Love to see your garden. If you've got a good photo, send it along. Margaret in Waterloo. Hello. Thank you for calling.
Well, hi there. I have two questions for you. One is Regarding the drought conditions we've had, I did do some transplanting from a garden to another one, and I'm wondering if I should be giving those plants any special, if I should be watering them during the warmer weather, since we haven't really had anything too cold.
If your soil is not frozen, yes. Yeah, because so, we're still not really completely out of the drought.
Yeah, so you can basically water your garden until the soil is frozen. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely.
Right. Normally we would say November, but that's because we thought it was going to freeze.
Right.
We forgot that we were living in Missouri.
Right.
Exactly. Okay, great. My second question is, I just bought some little lavender plants from a mail order company, but their selection, I couldn't find anything in their selection for my zone, so I bought one that's for the zone, that's a zone warmer. And so when you said our zones are changing, I was like, goody, maybe they'll survive.
Do you happen to know what lavender you got?
Oh, dear. No, I don't. This is the first time I've ever got it, and I've always liked it from afar. So I'm afraid I don't know.
Well, there are lavenders that are hardy here in Wisconsin that I've grown. In fact, I have it in the middle of a mint patch, and it manages to even compete with those bad plants. But if it's not for our zone, and you're in the Waterloo area, I would actually consider maybe potting them up and bringing them in the house for the winter.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And okay. It can overwinter fairly well. It's kind of more of an oceanside plant, so you may have to mist it to keep it happy.
Okay.
But if it's a zone warmer than we are, I wouldn't trust it. And it's one of the herbs that overwinters in the house a lot nicer than something like basil, which doesn't work at all.
Okay.
And Jungs or some other seed company, I'm pretty sure Jungs handles lavender.
Almost everybody
does. Almost everybody
does.
Sure.
Make sure you ask for the hardy variety, because there's some really, really pretty varieties that aren't hardy.
Yeah, unfortunately.
You know, it's usually, I think it's like Munstead lavender, and there's an English lavender. But if you're not, if this one said a different zone, you got to go with that. Pot it up, bring it in the house, put it in a sunny window.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you very much for calling. Let's see here. Carol in Madison, I believe, is next. Hi, Carol.
Hello. Well, I have a very specific question about gray water. My sister, who is a landscape gardener in Atlanta area, said, oh, yeah, you can use gray water for watering things, and I wash all my dishes by hand, so I've been throwing the gray water on the ground, and I also capture that first gallon that you need to warm up the water. I use that to water the garden. But then I did some internet search, and I believe it was the state of Washington where they had all sorts of cautions about the use of gray water. So do you know anything about how advisable it is to use gray water, leftover soap, dish soap washing stuff and bath soap, to just throw it on our flower beds?
We don't have the laws in place that they have in some of the more arid states where you can actually even pipe out your gray water. But there they pipe it out to like a retaining bed where it's filtered through the soil. I would definitely not use it on anything edible. Because we have no laws, because in fact I looked into it at one point and was told emphatically by our utility people, no. That was the answer I got. You know, as far as using it in your flower beds and places like that, you know, I think, and without getting in trouble here, that's up to you.
Yeah, well, you know, seems that what I saw on the whatever state's public site there that they had it, it seemed that certain plants were okay and others were not. And I thought, gee, I'm not going to be walking around with a map in my head of what's planted where.
Well, I do know that very soapy waters can be a problem, especially like with certain evergreens and certain, what am I trying to think of? Ivies, not ivies. It'll come to me.
Some perennial vine thing.
And that's what you got to watch out for. But at the same time, the systems that I've seen created in areas where water is much more of a premium, they usually have like gravel and then soil and then layers, and the gray water is pumped into there, so it's not being wasted. So I mean, there what you might do is, like you said, you checked in Washington, you might check in California, Arizona, and find out what their rules and regulations are, because I know people use it.
Well, we might need such a rule or regulation.
Exactly.
The way the weather's going.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. And somebody else was saying, now what all encompasses gray water?
It's your bath water, your sink water.
Yeah.
Not your toilet.
No.
Yeah. But it's,
okay.
It's
anything else?
Yeah.
No, that's it. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And we have Jim in Madison with a question next. Hi, Jim.
Hello, I'm calling actually with some comments that pertain to the lady whose blue spruce is showing some problems. Imprellis has the broadleaf herbicide developed by DuPont, which has since been found to do damage to trees, has particularly bad influence on spruce, and blue spruce particularly. I have had that experience myself. And, of course, although I know of you had people on talking about this, I don't think it's well known, and DuPont and the local lawn care companies haven't been very forthcoming in trying to protect us from this. So I've had that experience as well. That's my comment. I'll just hang up and listen.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And there are some, there's still a bunch of lawsuits out there on it too. So
right.
Very good points. We have Dennis in Wautoma with a question. Hi, Dennis.
Hi there. How are you?
Great. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I bought a house in the Wautoma area and some years ago, about 10 years ago, and it had some beautiful, very mature blue spruce, and they were 35, 40 feet tall. There's got to be 30 or 40 of them. And from about the ground up to as much as 8 or 9 feet, all the branches were dead, but there was a huge amount of tree above it that was appeared to be quite healthy. And, I've cleared the dead branches away by cutting back at the base of the tree over the past years. I didn't do it all at one time because there's just so many of them and I have other things I have to do. But my question is, I've noticed that the branches continue to die off as it goes. And more branches have died off on some of these trees going up the tree. And I'm wondering, are these trees diseased or is this a typical thing that blue spruce do?
Most likely, I can't swear by it, not seeing them, but most likely it is a disease. And in fact, that's why it's an overused plant. It's very popular. Nurseries carry it. And there are so many other evergreens that we can use that aren't so disease susceptible. Again, you can link to the Plant Pathology Disease Diagnostics Lab through Larry Mueller's website, and send in a cutting or send in a couple pieces of branches, and Brian Huddleston can tell you right away if it is a disease or not. But I would not be surprised if it is, because this is one of the reasons he doesn't recommend that we plant blue spruce. Because the normal lifespan of a good evergreen is 100 years.
Yeah.
And a lot of blue spruce, he says, they're lucky if they make 30 or 40. Which for a tree is a very short lifespan.
Yeah.
Well, and these trees have easily exceeded that age already. I think they were planted back in the 1960s.
Okay. Yeah. Well, then you're ahead of mine.
Yeah. Just an aging. They're just giving it up.
If they're struggling, if a tree is in stress from our weather, our drought. And then they're more susceptible to disease, too. So,
mm-hmm. Well, I know one did die this summer.
Well, a lot of things
died this summer.
Yeah. It was a tough year for things to survive.
Well, and we didn't have the capacity to water because, I mean, if it's a 7-acre yard, I don't have even with a well, I don't have the capacity to water. And I don't, you know, at the time we were using the house for a seasonal rental place. Now we've canceled or stopped doing that, and we're actually making it our home. So we're looking at what can we do to preserve and protect these trees from further damage.
Well, one thing because of the watering issue is make sure that they're very well mulched. That will at least, you know, if you can't get out there and water, that at least it lessens the stress and helps them retain moisture around their roots.
Very good. I'll make sure we do that for this coming summer.
All right.
Thanks, Dennis.
Well, thanks very much.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Appreciate the call. I've got a photo here on my Facebook page. Your eyes may not be good enough to see what it is. We need to identify that bush. It's been there ever since Heidi bought the house 3 years ago. It always looks sad. I was wondering if you could bring it back. She's trimmed out the dead pieces, wondering if the bush will thicken up again. My guess is that it will not thicken up again. And I think it will continue with its scraggliness until someone does a pruning cut at the base.
Generally, with an evergreen, there are very few evergreens you can prune to make them look nicer, and it looks like an evergreen.
Yeah.
The other thing I noticed right away is it's in gravel mulch, and it looks like there's landscape fabric sticking out.
Yeah.
And I've been told, any expert will go, nope, bad, bad. Get the gravel out, take the landscape fabric out, use a cedar mulch. The fact that it's also close to the house, it might be getting repeatedly burnt by the heat radiating from the house. Then you've got it getting burnt by the hot white gravel from the ground. So just getting rid of the gravel and that landscape fabric, it might flush out. It probably won't.
Probably won't.
But those are the two easiest things you can do right away.
Yeah.
And get some nice cedar mulch in there. Because the soil, what happens when you have a heavy gravel mulch is it's compacting the soil. So all the roots in there are getting compacted and, one of my favorite words, scorched. And roots don't like that. So the tree doesn't like that either. And then after, you know, a year of that, I might suggest Larry's pruning technique of pruning down to the ground and finding something more appropriate for the spot. Because it looks like if it did get happy and healthy, then it might be too big for the spot anyhow.
Yeah, that's the way it looks to me anyway.
But bye-bye gravel.
Bye-bye. Good detective work there. We've got a Milwaukee caller who'd like to know if the Wisconsin Gardener airs on Milwaukee Public Television, too, or is it just on Wisconsin Public TV?
It is on Milwaukee Public Television, but you almost need to call them because they do not follow our schedule. So I believe Tom Dvorak is the program manager there, and you know, call him and in fact, you know, bug him to air him more often. The other thing, though, that you can do, which I think helps a little, is now on our Gardner website, which WPT.org, and then click on Wisconsin up at the top. There's a whole bar that says Wisconsin. Then click on the Wisconsin Gardner. You can watch all of the segments, all of the shows back to 1992. You can watch me age overnight. It's not something I do, but you go ahead. So you can, if you can't get it in Milwaukee, or especially the older shows, I know he only airs the new shows. You can watch all of the shows.
Yep.
And they're categorized by topic. So if you've got a particular interest, a particular topic, just go to our website. You can watch them right there.
Great source. A great service, by the way. And we had a Facebook question from Mary Lynn. Is wondering, after our hot, dry summer, do you recommend any type of Christmas tree that would have a better chance of being indoors over the holidays?
Oh, no, that's a good question. I don't know if a particular variety. I think the trick would be when you go shopping, shake the tree.
Yeah.
Do needles fall off? Okay, don't buy that kind. Are the trees fresh? Ask the seller, where did the trees come from? You know, check the base. How fresh is the cut? It's going to be more how those trees were handled and treated rather than what variety. You know,
Yeah.
Because, you know, sometimes people, I mean, there are local places where you can cut it down yourself.
That's what we did this year.
Yeah.
And it was actually kind of a lot of fun. Took our 9-year-old out there and she held onto the tree while I sawed it off.
We do that, but my husband tends to have a problem with the saw. He's probably listening since he works for public radio. But, you know, yeah, we've done it that way. We've also gotten great trees, you know, at some of the local Christmas tree farms.
Yeah.
But do some shaking because, you know, especially if they're locally grown. It's been a rough year, but a lot of people import them from other places. But the drought was pretty widespread.
Yeah, it definitely was. Well, we have Clyde in Tish Mills next with a question. Hi, Clyde.
Hi. I'll be particularly interested in your show on potatoes that you said you had coming up there. We had 72 varieties of potatoes in our garden this year. And I was wondering if you had any idea why some varieties are so consistently good. Some varieties will do one year and not good another year. And why some varieties seem to gradually dwindle down after a few years, and then if you get new certified seed, then that variety is good again.
That's a lot of questions there. Are you practicing good crop rotation?
We try and do a 3-year rotation of them. So
okay, then. A lot of it, because you're reusing potato cuttings, I assume, and then you go back to seed when they start to dwindle?
Right.
My first question, I'm trying to talk backwards here, as usual. Just viability. You may need to go out and get a new batch once in a while, because by using your own, you know, unless you're picking very carefully the best and the most beautiful and the healthiest potatoes, it's hard to keep them as good as the original ones you got.
Okay.
This last summer, though, is in particular an impossible year to judge by.
Yeah.
If you had potatoes at all.
Kind of lucky.
Yeah. But when you're growing that many varieties, I know that some are more consistent than others. And that's why, you know, if you go to the grocery store, they're not going to have the varieties you have because they don't want to play with the inconsistencies, as you call them, the baking potatoes that you see at the grocery store. Those are consistently reliable, but if you're growing heirlooms or anything like that, some of them are more disease prone than others. So it's more of a gamble, but as far as I'm concerned, it's more fun because you also get a lot more taste variety too.
Right,
but. You may just have to switch up. I have to buy new garlic every once in a while. I grow my own garlic and have for 20 years, but then I'll start to see a decline too, and I'll have to refresh my crop. So it just might be that kind of issue.
That's a good point.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Clyde, for calling. Appreciate it. By the way, we have some open lines, finally. You can get in at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. As we visit with Shelley Ryan today of the Wisconsin Gardener, Larry Mueller here, Blue River Falls, Sue in River Falls, excuse me, you are next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hello.
Hi.
We got rid of all our buckthorn and prickly ash on our property.
Good for you.
And now we get to see the neighbor's house because of that. What's a good evergreen that we could grow along the property line now?
Full sun?
I would say full sun.
Well, okay, evergreens are going to grow slowly, so keep that in mind. But one of the ones that I really liked when I did talk with Brian Huddleston about what to grow instead of like a blue spruce, I really liked AB's Concolor, and I can't for the life of me think of the common name.
And could you spell that?
A-B-I-E-S.
A-D-I-B-S?
B as in boy. A-B's. Concolor. C-O-N-C-O-L-O-R.
Okay.
And had beautiful needles, beautiful shape to them. Again, a nice shape to the whole tree. And it's a very good replacement for something like a blue spruce.
And it gets rather tall?
Yes. And wide.
tall and wide. And you can get it at, like, local nurseries?
You might have to look around, and that's part of the problem, is that as long as, you know, nurseries keep selling some of the more disease-prone ones, it's harder to find some of these. What I'd also suggest is if you go to my website, you can find the segment that Brian Huddleston and I did where we talked about other evergreens to plant.
Okay.
And he rattled off a whole list of less disease prone evergreens.
Yeah, that'd be well worth it.
Right.
Okay, so that's the title of the program?
You're going to have to do a little, it might be under plant diseases. You'll have to do a little browsing. I mean, there's a lot of arborvitae that tend to grow a little faster. And if there's no, that might also be, but certain varieties, again, are more winter hardy and less prone to splitting than others. So that might be another one to look at.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Shelley Ryan, producer and host of Wisconsin Public Television, The Wisconsin Gardener. Our guest, I'm Larry Mueller, here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking today with Shelley Ryan, producer and host of Wisconsin Television's The Wisconsin Gardener. Great to have her along. Thank you for listening in. And you can call in at 1-800-642-1234 or go to my Facebook page, post there at the Larry Mueller Show. If you got a photo, maybe you've got a great garden photo or a plant that you're wondering about, want to take a photo and have a photo of it, put it up on the Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. And Judith reminded me, she's just posted the Plant Disease Diagnostic Laboratory link. It's in a comment to today's show status, so on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. I think we had it up there before, but just to make it easier, she's got it as a link in today's show status, so as a comment to today's show status. So there it is. Lots of calls today kind of related to plant disease, so it's worth it to have it up there. Mary Beth in Whitefish Bay, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have two questions. One is, she mentioned basil doesn't do so well inside, and someone gave me a grow light, and I've noticed that a lot of my plants and herbs that I had trouble with previously bringing inside are doing fabulously. So I'm wondering if I can start basil from seed inside and if it'll do well with the grow light. And then the second question is, about garlic, we have an organic gardener or organic farmer that we buy from in Evanston, this favorite fabulous garlic. And is it possible to take the same garlic that we eat and plant that? And then the third comment I had was about the question on Christmas trees. Just yesterday, the New York Times had a fabulous article on Christmas trees and what they're doing in terms of research. And there was a particular kind that was recommended that has a lot less needle drop, in addition to the cultural practices that she mentioned in terms of asking growers about. So it's a reference for people. They can search it on Google, you know, New York Times, and it's an available article to the public.
Excuse me. Excellent. Was it a Fraser fir, do you think, that they mentioned as a good Christmas tree?
I believe so, but I, you know, unfortunately I read it, you know, front to back and remember lots of details from it, but not that particular one.
Well, so, that's one of my favorites.
That's one of our, yeah, we usually purchase Fraser firs.
Yeah, and they last a long time, and they smell so good, too.
Yeah.
But, okay, answering your questions backwards, which means you may have to remind me here, but if you are buying your garlic from an organic farmer, yes, indeed, you can plant it.
Okay.
And now would be a good time. I planted it later, but then you have to use a pickaxe to get the frozen ground loose. And you just loosen the whole head of garlic and you plant the cloves individually. Plant them about 2 or 3 inches deep, and then you will need to mulch the area with leaves. I've done it with leaves. I've done it with straw. I've even done it with just grass clippings, something to kind of cover the soil.
How about peat moss?
Sure,
why not?
Yeah, just something to protect the soil. And they'll be the first things up next spring, and people will wonder why your corn is up so early. And then what was your first question?
Basil.
Oh, the basil, yes. And you can try it. The grow light will help, but basil is such a wimp that I don't know if you'll get enough to harvest. Now, if you have a heat mat underneath it, you might be successful, but it needs heat, it needs light, and it still seems to be susceptible to a number of insects, whitefly. I've given up with no matter what I've tried. I figure I'll wait till spring, and actually wait till summer.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you so much.
Yep,
You're welcome.
A lot for calling. You know, I just went over to your website, and there's the 2013 Garden Expo information, which is Friday, February 8th through Sunday, February 10th. And right in smack in the you're there the whole time.
Yeah.
I
get flat feet by the end.
Oh, my goodness.
But you and I are going to be
there. Yeah, that's going to be so much fun. At Saturday morning.
At 10.
At 10 o'clock.
And we're going to have a never-before-seen-by-the-public blooper tape.
Among other things.
Among other things,
it's
going
to
yes.
be a lot. It's always a lot of fun. I look forward to it every year, and this year is no exception. So that's... Put that in your calendar, Garden Expo, the weekend of February 8th through the 10th.
Yep.
And we've got Adam in Baldwin who has a question. Hi, Adam.
Hello. I have a question on June-bearing strawberries. I built a small garden box basically against the house. It's 2 feet by 8 or 9 feet long, something like that. And we planted them after... I guess their prime of this year, so it was only this season that we had planted them. And my mother-in-law said that we should cover them with straw for the winter months, but my wife doesn't want to have to dig all that back out again in the spring, so is wondering, she's been wondering like the necessity of doing that.
Yes. Sorry to get in the middle of that one, but yes, you do need to mulch them with straw.
Okay.
Otherwise, you're going to lose them.
Right.
Or you could well lose
right.
them.
Right. And even then, deer tend to like to munch on them even when they're buried in straw. Close to the house, hopefully, maybe that won't be a problem.
Okay.
All right. Good luck.
Well, that's perfect. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Adam. And Darlene in Viola, it is your turn. Hi, Darlene.
Good morning. I have a question regarding rhubarb, both younger plants and mature plants. Every year around, I would say, the end of July, mid to end of July and August, the plants start to die back, and the leaves just turn brown and die. And there's always new shoots coming up, but I don't know what's causing this. And there are no diseases that I can see, but it's just an annual thing.
Well, and it comes back every year.
Yes.
Okay, it's partially the heat. They tend to, you know, really wimp out, and in fact... Usually, I consider July 2nd to be about the last time I can harvest. This year was even worse because we had a really warm spell in the spring, followed by a cold snap, and then the heat came back. And I had, they looked like they were dead far earlier than normal. But they do tend to just kind of die back and look miserable. The best thing you can do is make sure they're a very heavy feeder, so always make sure that in the fall and in the spring that you put composted manure around them and that you are mulching them heavily.
And then when is the best time to divide, and can I just use a spade and just decapitate them down the middle of the plant?
You mean to cut them up into new babies, basically,
yes.
and spread them?
Yes.
That would be early spring,
yeah.
you know, once
okay.
you see the growth coming up.
Yep.
Okay, very very good. Thank you.
Sure.
Thanks a lot for calling. An email from Mark in Mequon has 2 20-foot maples that developed white ring spot on the leaves last year. They lost their leaves early in September. They appear to have buds on them for next season. You think they're okay for next season, or should we be worried, a little concerned about them? I don't think that's going to be a problem.
No, let's... if it happens again and continues to happen, then then the tree isn't getting food. But there's a number of like leaf galls and leaf spots that cause early exfoliation. Mm-hmm. Is hair, I think. So, if you see them again next year, you can always take a sample and send it to the Plant Disease Diagnostics Lab. But I wouldn't be worried yet.
Caller Don used to haul Christmas trees. He said the Fraser firs are the best. Yeah, they keep the needles the best. We're agreeing with us on that. Facebook question from Judy in Platteville. Are Colorado Black Hills spruce trees as short-lived as the blue spruce? What deer-resistant tree do you recommend instead?
I do not know if they are as short-lived. That would be a good question of a local nursery.
Yeah.
This is one of the reasons I always push for a local nursery, somebody who's growing them or knows the grower so that they can answer that question. Deer resistance. Huh. It really depends on how hungry the deer are.
Yeah.
I mean, we have a list of deer resistant, but during a bad winter, the deer will change their mind and eat anything.
Yeah.
If it's something you're really concerned about and have the time, burlap wrapped around the base is the best way to make them resistant.
Pat in Iron Ridge, hello to you.
Hi. Good afternoon. Oops. We're right almost at noon, so I don't know what to say. Okay. I'm calling because I have iris bulbs that have fresh growth, 4 to 5 inches tall, and I'm wondering if they'll be damaged now for next year.
Iris are pretty tough. One of the things I might suggest is getting some evergreen boughs over them now to keep them out of the sunlight and try to encourage them to think it is winter. Because it's basically the warm season and sunlight that are making them think time to grow. So, mm-hmm. There's lots of evergreens available right now. Most of them are for Christmas, but, mm-hmm. that's a nice light mulch that will not crush them and make them start to cool down.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I got plenty of that. Got a lot of pine trees.
There you go.
Can I ask another question?
Sure. Sure.
Okay. I have some potentilla bushes, too, that were pretty sparse this year. They were great last year, but not this year. And should I cut them back to the ground? And do I do it now or in spring?
I would wait till February, March, mm-hmm. Even early April. You want to do it before there's anything green on them. And potentilla are one of those that is actually one that you can do kind of a haircut on them. Mm-hmm. But I think I'd go out there and I'd look at them. If you've got branches mm-hmm. that look old and thick and gnarly, cut mm-hmm. those down to the ground and see if that doesn't encourage some new shoots coming up from the ground. More of renewal pruning.
Right.
All right.
Sounds good. Thank you very much.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. And Sheila in Glenwood City. Hi.
Hi, hello. I'm looking for an Eastern Red Cedar, and I've heard they're deer resistant, and I bought one. I had good luck with it, but I can't find a good size one to buy because I guess they are a companion host with an apple tree disease.
And cedar apple rust.
Yeah, and I'm also looking for an old-fashioned green rhubarb, which I have a hard time finding. So is there any possibility of finding those two plants?
The web search is where I do a lot of my looking for the trees.
Eastern Red Cedar.
Johnson's Nursery is always a good place. They carry just about everything. They're in near Milwaukee, I think Sussex.
Yeah.
And have an enormous selection.
Yeah.
That's just off the top of my head.
Yeah, you could actually go online to their website and take a look.
I think they actually carry the
Eastern Red
Cedar. Green rhubarb, is that still around?
That was the cedar. That's for the cedar. For the green rhubarb, mm-hmm. you're going to have to probably go online. You might try, because it's an old-fashioned rhubarb, I would recommend trying Seed Savers Exchange.
That's a good idea. Seeds.
Mm-hmm. Seed Savers Exchange.
Decorah, Iowa.
Right. And they have a website.
Okay.
And they specialize in old-fashioned.
So go online, put in Seed Savers Exchange, Decorah, Iowa, and it's going to pop right up.
It's actually seedsavers.org.
Oh, there it is. Shelley Ryan, our guest today. She is the producer and host of Wisconsin Public Television's The Wisconsin Gardener, started back in 1992 and still going strong. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Gardening is such a great activity that so many of us enjoy, and it's always nice to have a friend to share it with. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along for this edition of Garden Talk, and great to have one of our old friends, Shelley Ryan, back for another show. She is the producer and host of The Wisconsin Gardener on Wisconsin Public TV. Always fun when she's stops by. And as a matter of fact, she's comes up as probably the most favorite host or the most favorite guest for a Garden Talk show that we have. So,
wow.
What do you think of that?
That's very nice. Host was nice too, though.
Well, you've hosted it too, and you did a darn good job on that too.
Well, thank you, but you make it look a lot easier than it is, Larry.
Well, Mike and Slinger has a question for you about arborvitae. We can probably take a crack at answering that one.
I think we can do that one.
Mike, hi.
Hi there. I have a five-year-old hedge of arborvitaes, more of a privacy fence. And I'm not sure, when is the proper time to do pruning or trimming of the sides of it? Because I want it 6 to 7 feet tall, and it's almost there, but it's on the property line, so I want to keep it a little bit skinnier or slimmer, so it doesn't get too much girth on it.
I'm with the school that February, March, there's no insects out, there's no diseases out, and what else are you going to do in the garden at that time of year? So that's my favorite time to do those kind of things.
Oh, fantastic. That's when I will do it.
And be, you know, it's one of the more prunable evergreens out there. But, you know, be gentle with it. Don't just do a haircut. You know, take it branch by branch and then step back once in a while so that you don't do what I did to my bangs once. You know, I mean, you know, step back so that you can look at the shape you're trying to get.
Great. I will do that.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot. Yeah, thanks a lot. Oh, and we've got an email from Connie, who is, she is just a wonderful person. And it has to do with that gray water that we were talking about earlier. Connie and her husband were along on their trip to England this past summer, and she's reminding me of that. She's I remember one of the sage older couples that we visited in Kent this summer at Old Buckhurst, which was delightful. They mentioned that for drought circumstances this summer, they hooked up a line to drain their bathtub water to use in the garden. She said, and Connie says, I also remember my grandmother using the water from the washing machine to water in the garden. She used soap and not detergents, and that may be a key element.
You know, I don't even think there's a key element. Somehow we've gotten away from it because we're nervous about it.
Yeah.
You know, because it's quote-unquote dirty. And because, like I said, I know in a lot of Western states, they use gray water. They even let you pipe it out. But here in Wisconsin, it's never been an issue before. And I just wonder how active we'll have to be to get some of those laws and regulations changed.
Yeah.
You know, because it's soap, detergent. I mean, if it's biodegradable, it shouldn't be an issue. But we've gotten away from those kind of practices. And, you know, the more droughts we have, I think we're going to have to look at things a little differently.
And Connie, thanks for that reminder. Boy, we had a great time. Great time.
I'd like to do one of those trips.
Oh, man, it was fun. It was fun. And she's a great gal. Edith in Kenosha, thank you so much for calling. Hi.
Hi. I wanted to ask, my granddaughter moved from Kenosha to Des Moines, Iowa, and rented a townhouse. And in the backyard is a gorgeous, gorgeous, huge tree. It has about 6 trunks growing out of, you know, one root. And but the trunks are enormous. It has a very, very typical oak leaf. But it doesn't drop acorns. It drops a seed pod. just kind of a mass of seeds that are all kind of rolled together in a ball. And we're trying to identify what that is.
That is a very good question. A photo would help greatly.
Yeah, if you've got a photo, is there any way you can, if you could post it on my Facebook page or email it to me?
Okay, I'll get her to, she could do that.
Yeah, have her do that.
You know, with her phone, really, you know.
Okay.
Yeah,
because nothing is coming to mind, but.
Okay. I'm sure we can get, I can definitely get somebody, if you want to email it to me, just email it to Miller@wisc.edu, M-E-I-L-L-E-R. Or go to my Facebook page, you can just email from there, too, at the Larry Miller Show. But
I'll do that.
I can, if you email it to me, I can easily forward it to one of our tree people, and they'll have a quick answer for you.
Okay, and I should have her email it to Larry Mueller. Would you spell your last name for me?
Sure, it's M-E-I-L-L-E-R.
Okay.
And then it's at W-I-S-C for Wisconsin.
W-S-I-C.
I-S-C. Okay. W-I-S-C. Like Wisconsin?
Yes, right.
W-I-S-C.edu.
Okay.
All right.
I'll do it. I thank you so
we'll get
much
you an answer, and we'll get you an answer really quick. All right. Thanks a lot, Edith, for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's go to Teresa in Ironwood. Teresa, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a begonia corm I dug up this fall and put it in fresh dirt and lightly covered it, put it in the basement, but it's sprouted now.
How warm is your basement?
Yeah, it must be too warm. It's been warm this fall.
That could be. I mean, you know, it makes...
So what do I do? Break them off or what?
Well, it's a great houseplant. Because of the fact that it's growing, you might just want to bring it back upstairs and enjoy it over the wintertime. I have a number of begonias that I leave, as long as they're happy, I leave them upstairs.
Oh, it's not going to get too leggy or anything?
You can cut it back as it does. I mean, don't cut it when it's, you know, real little, but, you know, let some of that green growth comes up, put it, you know, put it in some good new potting soil.
Okay.
And, you know, put it in a sunny window. You know, it's a shade plant outside, but we usually don't get enough sun inside.
Yeah.
So as long as it's not getting burnt, you know, like if you had a south window or an east window, I wouldn't put it directly in there. But if you've got a nice, bright, sunny window... that would be the place to put it and enjoy it.
Okay, but is it going to be a goner then next summer or what?
I think it should just keep growing.
Yeah.
You know, just give it when spring or when the weather gets warm and we're past the danger of frost, kind of give it time to harden off.
Uh-huh.
You know, just like you wouldn't put yourself outside for 7 hours because you'd fry to a crisp.
Yeah.
So put it out there for like half an hour the first day and gradually build up so that it has a chance to get adapted.
Okay, good. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Judith is reminding me that people can always get to me and get to her by going to talk@WPR.org. That's an email address. Talk@WPR.org. Talk is easier to remember than how to spell Mueller, that's for sure.
That's for sure.
talk@WPR.org. And I also, gosh, I keep forgetting to remind people that next Friday, December 14th, I will be broadcasting in Milwaukee from the Marcus Center. So we'll be doing
fun.
The garden. Yeah, live from 11 to 12:30. And Melinda Myers, she's right there in Milwaukee anyway, so she's coming over, and we're going to do the show live and inviting everybody, anybody who happens to be in the area, to please come to the show. Get there a little early. You know, if you get there by 10 or so, we'll have some time to chat beforehand and certainly have some time after the show. And you could even ask questions of, you know, Garden Talk questions during the show. So, and we've got more information on that at WPR.org/Milwaukee. So, but it's next Friday, December 14th, 11 to 12:30 at the Marcus Center. I got to remember to, you know, if you don't tell people, are they going to ever show up? Of course, you know.
Well, you got to remember to be there yourself, Larry.
Yeah, that you know, that I don't think I'll forget that. That I'll remember. Oh, man. Carol in Green Bay, your turn. Hi, Carol.
Hello. I'm fun to comment. I'm growing and harvesting turnip greens currently in Green Bay. I planted them in August, and the turnips are like thick pencils, but the greens are wonderful, and I just cut them off, throw them in soups and stews, and I throw the pencil turnips in the soups and stews also, and I just think that's, I'm saving a little money, and I'm putting some nutrients in my soups.
Well, and that's the great fun of having a long fall, long or slow winter, whatever we want to call it, is, you know, if you take the time to plant a fall garden, you don't know how long that might last. Some years not long at all, but this year, hey.
Long time.
Yeah. Fantastic.
And those greens and the turnips, I mean, you don't have to wait for the turnips to get full. Just
no.
Heck.
No. And the little small leaves are even great in salads.
Right. My question is, are there other plants that we can plant now in August, September, October that might persist in this warm weather?
Well, people put in second crops of things like radishes, any of the lettuces. I'm trying to think what parsnips. Mm-hmm. Well, no, those are more of a long growing. They need a long growing season. What's the other one? Beet greens.
Beets.
Is another one.
Oh. You get beet greens are good.
And actually, if you plant parsnips in the spring and leave them in the ground, they don't mind even a hard frost. And if you mulch them, I can actually remember one year walking out to the garden in knee-deep snow where I had heavily mulched the parsnips and harvesting them in December with snow on them. So parsnips, as long as you've got them mulched well before the snow hits, the ground will not freeze. And you can do that with parsnips, carrots. But again, you have to plan ahead before it snows.
Right.
You know, so there are a lot of things like that. But lettuce would have been the first one that comes to mind.
Okay.
Kale. Kale is another very frost hardy. In fact, it gets sweeter in the frost.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks.
Sure.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. By the way, I haven't given the number in a while here. We've got a bunch of open lines. We can get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Let's take a look at our Facebook questions. Gail wonders on Facebook, any expert suggestions about plantings along the edge of a 2-foot-high deck? Deck is shaded by a very handsome cedar. So something that grows well in its shade, but also like plantings that would grow, they want them about 5 feet tall with a fairly thick growth and also gorgeous flowers all summer. I'm telling you, Gail, you're a woman who is...
After it all.
She wants all. She wants it all. And also if it's anything that might be edible besides...
Yeah. We're a little stumped on this. A couple plants come to mind. I don't know if we can answer everything for you, but I do think of pagoda dogwoods.
Yeah.
Beautiful shape in the winter, pagoda-like shape. You can't eat the berries, but the birds can and love them. They have beautiful flowers for part of the summer. They have nice fall color, and they're one of our most shade-tolerant trees.
And the birds love them.
Yeah.
Birds love the berries. And it's fun to, fun to have them there.
Yeah.
See the birds.
So that's the first thing that I think that comes to mind.
Yeah, and I think that's a very good suggestion. Pretty hard to get all those other things.
Yeah. Now, I do know the berries are great for dyeing silk scarves.
But you can't eat them.
Yeah.
Well, very good. And let's see, we've got some other callers online here. So go back to the phones in just a minute. How about Rocky and Amory? Rocky, hi. Thanks for
a question. Instead of planting a whole package of seeds, is there a way to keep seeds over the season and reuse them the next year?
Yes, indeed. There's a couple you can't. But for them, I mean, they've actually found bean seeds from archaeological digs in Native American ruins that mm-hmm. are thousands of years old that sprout.
Okay.
So bean seeds are great. Tomato seeds are fine. Most seeds are fine. The ones that don't work well are onions and lettuces.
I was questioning because you were just talking about lettuce, and I was thinking, boy, that'd be really good this time of year to have some fresh lettuce.
It wouldn't it, though? I mean, I'm craving it myself. And, I mean, now you can, if you kept it from the spring to fall, that's fine. It just, if you're going to, like, keep the seeds till next year, you're going to want to plant triple the amount you're supposed to, because its germination rate dies off quickly. Same thing for any of the onion seeds. And the way you do it is you keep it in a cool, dry place. I used to put it in an airtight Tupperware with some of those desiccant packages you right. get, and I actually kept it in the fridge.
Would it be okay to put it, can they handle freezing?
That I don't know. I have not frozen them. I always kept them in the fridge or down in my basement, which is about 50 degrees. And
so
then
putting
again,
them in an airtight container and
yes.
sticking them out in the garage is not advisable.
No, because you're not getting a steady temperature out there. You're getting ups and downs.
Okay.
Yep.
But I've done it for years and years and years, and it's quite easy as long as you just find a place back of the fridge, cool spot in the basement.
So the moral of the story is just because they put a date on a package, as long as it's not lettuce or what else did you say?
Lettuce and onions.
Lettuce and onions. You don't have to go out and buy fresh seeds nope. every year.
And another hint, though, there's a wonderful seed company called Pine Tree.
Okay.
Pine Tree Nursery or Pine Tree Garden Seeds.
Okay.
And they sell more human amounts. So then instead of giving you 500 lettuce seeds that you're, what
right.
are you going to do with, they sell, you know, 100.
Where can you tell me quickly where they're at?
I don't know where they're at, but look them up. You'd have to.
I'll look them up. I'm up in Amory here. I'm kind of isolated from the real world.
Well, this is a mail order company, Pine Tree Garden Nursery, Pine Tree.
Pine Tree Garden Nursery, I think, isn't it?
I think that's what it is.
I'll find them.
And they have a wonderful catalog.
I'll find them. All right. Thank you very much.
Yep. You're welcome.
Thanks a lot for calling. A caller in Milwaukee's frustrated because the bees are getting to her grapes before she can. How do you protect the grapes? I'm surprised that they're after the grapes.
I've not heard of that before.
I wonder what kind of bees. I wonder if it's not bees. I wonder if it's hornets, but
the wasps.
Wasps.
Well,
could be wasps.
This year in particular, or every year has this happened? Because this year we've had critters go after things because they were, you know, starving.
Yeah.
You know, we've had more mice troubles in my house than I've ever had before in my life.
Yeah, we've had that. You know, you could put a cover, floating row cover over them.
Yeah, after the fruit has
After the fruit's gotten started, you put a floating row cover over them. That's probably not going to keep all of them out, but it'll keep most of them out, I would think.
Or capture some of the insects and get them ID'd by Phil Pelletieri. Find out what you're dealing with, first of all.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like a bee issue to me.
I don't, yeah.
But let's go to Marty in Green Bay. Marty, hi.
Hi. I have a 5-year-old vegetable garden with raised beds. And I rotated my crops 3 times. The soil is getting depleted. I don't have access to farm manure like my family used to do years ago. What can I do to improve the nutrients in my garden bed?
Well, you can always buy composted manure at garden stores, hardware stores, places like that. And that works just as well. In fact, it's better than fresh manure anyhow. You're not supposed to use fresh manure.
Right. That's so, right. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Also and, starting a real good compost pile.
And how? What time of year do I do this?
The compost pile?
The composted manure from the big box stores.
Because it's composted, it's really like... it's like putting just fresh soil in your garden. You can do that.
Okay.
You can do that in the spring. You wouldn't want to put it directly on, you know, like any fruit or vegetables. But you put it, you put it in there and work it into the soil in the spring when you're getting your beds ready to plant.
Yeah.
Terrific.
All right. Thank you very much. Okay. Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And Catherine in Verona, hi to you.
Hey, Larry, this is Catherine. Hi. I wanted to add to the conversation about winter gardening or late autumn gardening. I have been enjoying, even today, picking greens for my garden, and I agree with you that the floating row cover is a wonderful invention, or at least a repurposing of probably fabric from interfacing or whatever that stuff is. But I wanted to tell you just a list of the things that I still have green and able to pick in my garden because I've covered things with floating row covers. I've just picked my carrots, potatoes I've just harvested. I can go down and get greens from kale, as you said. The kale has been delicious. Bok choy is beautiful. Brussels sprout leaves are amazingly sweet, and I've never heard anyone talk about eating Brussels sprout leaves.
No, I haven't either.
Oh, try them. They're sweet, especially after the frost like this. Oh, my goodness.
It's
just amazing. And broccoli leaves. The broccoli flowers got frosted under the floating row cover. They were just too cold back about just before Thanksgiving. But, oh, my goodness, the leaves are still great, and they are sweet. Oh, just wonderful. So, of spinach, chard, that's it. That's it. But, I mean, I have children come over. We have a huge garden now, and inside of a secure chain-link fence, and people can come and share the bounty with me anytime. But I have a question. You mentioned rodents in your house. Well, my problem with my raised beds here is I do a lot of lasagna gardening, and I went under my covers to get spinach the other day, and I found rodent tunnels.
Oh, no, and we can't even address. I can tell you right now, if you found tunnels, Catherine, and it's moles, they're going to be going down very soon, and you're going to be rid of them. Because they have to go down under the frost line because they are going to hibernate. So you will be rid of them. But I wish we had more time to talk. And here we are out of time. And Shelley, thank you so much. You'll
My
be
pleasure.
Back.
Yes.
You'll be back again. We'll do it again with her. Shelley Ryan, producer and host of Wisconsin Public Television's The Wisconsin Gardener. And I'm sorry, Catherine, we didn't have more time. But that's the way it always is. Thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.
When somebody steals your identity, they only take the good parts, you know? They don't take the rat trap apartment and the depression. And the
Join us next time for the Moth Radio Hour. True stories told live. No notes, no net. From the Public Radio Exchange, PRX.org.
Tonight at 7 on the Ideas Network.